This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Wells Tech is back on the air. This is Martin Spriggs, episode 441 for Tuesday, April 19th, 2016. I'm Martin Spriggs again, as always, a show about technology and ministry. And coming to us from the other side of the internet, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. April 19th is a very special day. And you know what? I bet they're celebrating over on the Wells Tech website. We should take a look.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shucks. You can't look. I have to show it, and it's not behaving very well. Let's see if you see my screen here. I noticed something special about the Wells Tech website today. Did you check it? Did you see that there?
We have our own little doodle up there, don't we?
There's a party hat happening there, because this is a special day. It's not often, Martin, that we get to podcast on your birthday.
So. I don't know if it's ever happened. We probably should have done the research, but thank you, Sally. I'm surviving another birthday, yes. And
good,
he just pointed
you
out to me that Google even knows my birthday. If I go to the Google search page, they've recognized that, yes, indeed, it is again my birthday.
So having a happy one so far, lots of Facebook greetings and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Facebook explodes on your birthday. I think everybody gets that, which is kind of cool because I got the first birthday greetings from people on the other side of the world. So, you know, a few people in Hong Kong and Japan, and they showed up on my Facebook page right away, and then it kind of moved across the globe. So,
and it's funny that you say, oh yeah, that's what everybody experiences, because I think when we started this podcast some 8 or 9 years ago, that wouldn't have been what we said, but we very much have adjusted our lives to this socially connected world that we are in. And the other side of the world isn't nearly so far away. That's a good thing when you want to do outreach to all the people of the world.
Yeah, so it's neat. It really is. And I thank God for the years of grace he has given me. And it's kind of neat to watch him work in your own life and the life of our show, too, which is kind of cool. So,
very true. We thank him for the work that you do for Wells. For
Thank
sure.
You. Thank
so,
you.
Blessings on your special day.
All right. Enough of the birthday greetings. We need to get to work here. We are coming close, I think, to the end of our book. We decided some probably 8-9 months ago that we were going to write a book about project management, especially for churches, schools, and other our religious or faith-based organizations. And we are up to chapter 8. We've kind of covered all the main topics, and chapter 8 is a little bit more of a retrospective kind of look back over all the things that, and in some ways a very negative chapter, all the things that could go wrong in a project. And that's kind of why you write a book in the first place about a topic like project management, is hopefully you don't get it wrong or things don't go poorly, but they always do. Both you and I have managed projects, been on many projects where troubleshooting is required, and that's the name of our chapter, Troubleshooting. The name of our book is With All Your Heart, because it's really about kind of giving it all you got, and a book about stewardship, how to use your time, how to use your talents to the glory of God for whatever project you're working on.
You know, Martin, it just struck me, as much as we've prepared for our podcast today and the work that we've put into this chapter, when you were talking about the title of the book, With All Your Heart, this is probably the part where your heart really does come into play, because you've invested a lot in your projects.
Yeah.
And when things don't go as smoothly as you hope or envision, it can really pull on you, and you want to, you know, make things work. You want to be able to resolve whatever issues have come up. I think part of the way to do that is to be realistic that you're going to be hitting against some challenges and maybe that lessens the blow a little bit and puts you more in a proactive mode of dealing with them as they come up and getting back on track.
Yep, absolutely. So just a little bit about how we've been working through the book. If you're just joining us, we're writing it a month at a time, and we're publishing it as we go, and we're looking for feedback as we go as well to make it better, use experiences from not just us, but you know, whoever would like to contribute. And so you can find that online at withallyourheart.tech. That's withallyourheart.tech. So you can find all of the chapters so far. And we've also put this in a little bit more of a dynamic, web-friendly, mobile-friendly format using a Microsoft product called Sway, SWA.com. And that's kind of fun, too. So as we write these chapters, we're putting it up there. You can embed videos. Sally, I got to tell you a funny story. It kind of shows you how old I am getting in the senior moments that I continue to have. So I'm preparing for a presentation on Saturday at Northern Wisconsin District Workshop, which I participate in almost every year. Actually, this is for Friday. I got one on Friday, too. It's a staff ministry conference. And I've done this presentation before. It's called Digital Christianship. And I just did this up at MLC, in fact. And so I have it kind of baked, and I knew that I just really needed to spruce it up a little bit. And I looked all over for this presentation. And normally I'd been keeping them in Google Slides because they're always online, easy to search, easy to find. I said, oh, not there. None of these look right. Then I looked in my presentations folder where my PowerPoints are. Not there. I said, this is not good. Did I delete this thing? Am I going to have to write this over? I don't have enough time this week to do two presentations. I already thought I had this one in the bag. And I thought, where could this thing have gone? I thought, well, I always create, and this is a good kind of pro tip for presenters, create a shortcut through Bitly. To your presentations that you give at the end or the beginning of the presentation, so everybody attending can grab it, you know, and write it down, and they don't have to furiously scribble everything else that you're talking about for the hour or whatever. So that maybe I'll go in Bitly and see if I can find out where the link is to this presentation that I looked for a half hour and couldn't find. So sure enough, went over to Bitly, found it, and lo and behold, I had decided to use Sway.
I remember.
Maybe I should have
asked
you
first. I saw you do it at MLC. Yep.
I think you were there. And boy, was I relieved that I had, first of all, used Bitly like I always do, and that the presentation was, yes, indeed, intact and ready for me to use on Friday. So.
Well, good for you. That was maybe just a little birthday gift to keep you humble, huh?
Exactly. So anyway, that's a long story to tell you that remember where you put your presentations, and not a problem with all your heart, because they're all in Sway. So we'll get the link. Yeah, you can find the link on that page that we referenced too. But so we should probably get back to troubleshooting. This was actually a pretty easy chapter to write because there's no shortage of things that can go wrong, you know, with a project. All kinds of things that can go wrong. I think we started with probably the thing that kills most projects, and that's that they just kind of stop. They get stuck. They just don't go forward. They lose attention. Somebody drops the ball. Somebody thought somebody else was supposed to be doing something. I think it's not from any other reason other than the fact that it didn't go any further. So I'm sure that's happened to you before, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it probably helps to keep your pulse on all the projects and to keep a big picture about the projects and when due dates are, maybe a calendar that's in a prominent place in your church office or school office or whatever, because things come in and your inbox fills up with more things, and all of a sudden what you were working on is at the bottom of the pile and it just never resurfaces. And so just kind of a keeping a pulse on things maybe helps things not to get lost. But sometimes it's unavoidable. Things aren't clearly defined, maybe. People just get discouraged and don't think you're paying attention to them. Whatever it is, you know, just keeping it in front of you and keeping good communication channels open, those kind of things might help things stay moving forward.
Yep. So let's talk a little bit about some of the common reasons a project might get stuck. One of them that I see a lot, and both in the projects that I'm working on and others, is just this lack of who's supposed to be doing what. Nobody knows who's responsible for what. Nobody's being held accountable. You can't really get a sense for where things are if you're not quite sure you know, what the tasks are and who's supposed to be doing them and by when. And for me, and this is kind of a productivity tip, this is one of those light bulb moments you get once in a while when you do reading and you're trying to work on your own system and do things a little bit smarter. I've learned over the years that it's really important to kind of keep what I call, and what productivity, some productivity gurus call, a waiting for list. So that when anybody is assigned something or delegated something, it goes on this list. So now you have a running list of all the things that have been delegated or assigned, and you can easily go back and determine who's got the ball, who is supposed to be doing something, and then it's easy to contact them saying, hey, did this get done? Oh, yeah, it got done. I just forgot to tell you. Or, no, forgot about it, got busy, whatever. So you kind of know why it got stuck and where it got stuck, and you kind of kickstart it if you know where to look. So that's that waiting for list concept, and also just an encouragement never to leave a meeting without that action items list, where all the action items that are listed there coming out of the meeting have a place, have a name, have a due date, so that it's pretty easy to follow where things are.
Yep. Another reason things may get stuck is that people just seem to get busy. Like I said, there's life going on outside of your project and the things you need to get done there, and maybe other things get piled on top and they forget about what they committed to and as the next action in that meeting you had or whatever. So I think there it's just really good communication and regular communication for the project so that you're keeping it in front of people, reminding people of target dates and things like that.
Yep, absolutely. Another thing I see quite often, Sally, is that tasks aren't as maybe clear or as direct as they should be. Call them fuzzy tasks in the book, where they're just too broad. It's very difficult to execute on them because you're not quite sure what they mean. So we use an example of, let's say, a VBS project. A fuzzy task might be promotion. That's a big, big topic. So if somebody just has a task of promotion, that may not be concrete or specific enough for them to know what to do, especially if they haven't done it before. So detail is lacking, and you really need to kind of get specific. One way that I found to get specific is try to use strong action verbs in your task construction so that when you're writing a task, make sure there's that very specific verb. So maybe it's design a VBS door hanger, call the printer to get a quote, schedule day for door hanging, email principal to see if school kids can help with door hanging. You kind of get the idea that it's very specific, something that you could watch somebody do rather than kind of the fuzzy, broad tasks that are very easy to write but very hard to do.
Very good. Another example of a challenge that could cause your project to get stuck is folks really not having what they need to do the tasks they're responsible for. Maybe you call this up the creek without a paddle. That's and right. In that case, you know, perhaps they need some money to spend or they need some training to fully grasp all that they're responsible for, or some additional hands to help out with folding all the flyers or whatever it may be. They just literally don't have what they need to get it done. And one thing that can happen here is that the project manager may not be aware that it's even a stumbling block. So a good way around that would be to just ask, is there anything standing in your way? And a good time to ask that is then during those regular meetings that you're going to have to keep a pulse on the project, keep things moving and stuff. So make that one of your regular questions you ask your team. What are the hurdles? What's keeping you from getting things done? And you might be surprised what you hear and actually be able to, you know, make some actions, do some things to alleviate whatever their pressure points are.
Right. I think another common reason projects get stuck is because of the project manager, maybe the absence of project management. And probably the reason very often that we as project managers let a project get stuck is we have too much to do. We've said yes to too many things, which means that nothing really gets done well. This is a hard one because we always want to say yes. There are good things that need to be done, and you know, very important things that need to be done in the church or the school or wherever. And it's really hard to say no, but we have to recognize that saying yes to fewer things makes it a little bit more certain that we can kind of follow through and have the commitment that we need to do these projects with excellence, to continue to pay attention, to get them unstuck where they are stuck, and just kind of be good project managers because we're able to pay attention. So I think that's a hard one, but really, really important to kind of keep things going is make sure you don't have too much on your plate.
It's worth mentioning also that your teammates or those that are working on the project need some positive reinforcement. So avoid allowing them to become discouraged and, you know, be there for them. Let them know that what they're doing is making a difference. Help them with that buy-in that we talked about back in the chapter on volunteerism, where they have ownership and pride and motivation, and do that with regular feedback to them and encouragement and such. We actually have a couple of links that we share in the book in this section related to volunteer recognition. One from Volunteer Spot, which is a really great website that you can use to organize volunteers and communicate with them and, you know, make them aware of needs and things. They have this slide deck available called Volunteer Appreciation Guide, Ideas from A to Z, where you can actually walk through the alphabet and just see all kinds of great ways to let your volunteers know that you appreciate them. So worth checking out. One more from Volunteer Power, How to Motivate Volunteers, and I really like this. It's not a very long read. They have some great ideas here to help motivate volunteers. So if you haven't done so, how about after the podcast, you head out and find your favorite volunteers and tell them how much you appreciate their work. It goes a long way to keeping your projects moving.
Yeah, we've talked about this a little bit in a previous chapter, but probably one of the big killers of a project is, you know, when people get down, they don't feel appreciated. There's just general kind of a down feeling about the entire project, and they're not motivated then. And that can be a killer. Maybe one of the last things that at least I thought of in dealing with stuck projects is kind of that feedback loop that doesn't exist, that reporting, what we would call a reporting failure, either from the project team member to the project manager or even from the project manager to the team. That there just isn't consistent reporting or communication. And if that's the case, then you're kind of flying blind. You're not sure what each other's doing. Nobody's really on the same page. So you really need to find that consistent feedback loop or that rhythm that, you know, you get information, you give information. It can be a real simple report. It doesn't have to be complicated, but it does need to be consistent. And as a project leader, that's really your responsibility. A couple of things that I've seen that work really well is write a weekly email, kind of a summary of what you know to be true about the project, and then invite people to comment on that. Just remember that's also an opportunity for encouragement. It should be short and sweet, but it should really remain pretty pretty positive. Don't call anybody out for their lack of progress or give anybody the guilt. Include encouragement and maybe some inspiration from God's word. It is God's project, so insert God's word where appropriate and watch it do its work.
So all of those are examples of a project being stuck and reasons why that might happen. I think you conclude this section, Martin, with a good statement that if it's stuck, get it going again. Don't let it die. It's a lot easier to keep things going than it is to start over all from fresh. So definitely invest the time, look at these possibilities and, you know, zero in on what challenges you're facing and try to turn that around so that it becomes unstuck.
Then we go into a few other areas that can create some kind of chaotic situations in a project. One of them that every project manager deals with, and you've probably heard the phrase scope creep, that is really anything that kind of can get inside your project that expands the original project requirements and maybe threatens the desired outcome of the project. So the client or even the project team can do this to itself. They're saying, well, we initially said this is what we were going to do. Now let's just add this and maybe we tweak that and we can add this and, oh yeah, this sounds like a good idea. And before you know it, what you're doing bears very little resemblance to what you started out doing. And that means that project costs might increase, that certainly the time it takes to do it might increase. You may not even have the right people on the project to now do what you had hoped you would do at the beginning.
So as we wrote the book, we also included some helpful resources along the way. And it's probably worth mentioning that back in earlier chapters, we had provided various documents that could be used. For instance, a project request form where you kind of visualize what the whole project is. Project requirements where you wrote down what you wanted the project to include, what steps needed to be accomplished for the project to be done successfully. And then a project summary, again, kind of an overview of who's going to be involved and when it's going to happen and all kinds of details about the project. And so sometimes when you're in these situations where scope creep maybe is upon you and people are asking you to go three different directions than what you're currently going, revisiting those early documents can kind of firm up your vision of the project and support the direction you've taken it. And you know, maybe it's appropriate to say, you know, your ideas are great, but we have to stay on track with what we originally envisioned and, you know, continue with that and consider those ideas for another round or next year's project or whatever it may be.
Yep. The next topic here is kind of one that you and I are living right now, Sally, where we're looking at a little bit different project management framework or approach that suggests that maybe it's not the greatest idea to work, and at the very end, then you release your product or your service or whatever it is. And we use an example of a website where you, as a project team or whoever, be working on this project, and then one day the project's done and you release the website on the world, and it's maybe not what everybody was expecting, or people have criticisms or said, well, why, where is this and where's that? I think the kind of the new approach or the new way of maybe avoiding that kind of waterfall type project, the Big Bang project, is to do it in little smaller chunks. So do a little work, show your work, do a little bit more work, show your work, and take feedback along the way. So it's kind of a small cycle that you go through over and over and over again until the project's finally done. But it can help you refine requirements as you go. So as people see things and as you talk through things, you can get to a point much more quickly and then move on to the next one and the next one. It seems to make a lot of sense as far as just kind of looking at things in a little bit smaller pieces.
So you might actually be able to react better to those kind of scope changes. The terminology is agile, and we have some links in the book we'll include in the show notes. Agile in a nutshell is maybe a good place to go to just get a general idea about the concept. They have this great graphic incrementally with little small rocks as opposed to one big giant boulder all at once. And that iterative approach does allow you to be more reactive. So on the front end, maybe you have a vision of what your requirements are, but you don't flesh them out fully until you get to the point in the project of completing particular requirements. And at that point, they may have taken a slightly different shape as you've done your work along the way. Just following your website example, Martin, maybe you get the new homepage design out there with a church calendar, some real basic information, and you get feedback that this color scheme and design is just not real usable. So rather than having to redesign the entire website, you only have two pages built so far, and it's a lot easier and quicker to make the change at this point and then move forward with more pages being developed. So
failures are smaller and more easily recovered from, and I think that's
definitely
one of the blessings for this kind of approach.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big things that I think nonprofits, churches, schools struggle with is funding. And sometimes funding is the problem. You can't complete the work without the appropriate kinds of dollars there. And maybe you thought you had so many dollars, but then offerings were down or budget reallocations happen and your funding dries up. And that's something that you have to account for. We talked a little bit about this in Chapter 7, I think it was, where we were reminding good project managers to make sure they're communicating to as many people as they can so they can build up steam, they can make sure that if there maybe is competition for funds, everybody at least knows that what they're giving up if they defund this project, so there's an awareness of how important the project is. And maybe we might even find some people, individual members or groups, who would contribute toward the project because they have a heart for it.
Definitely. And, you know, I mentioned that we had some documents that we shared early on. One that fits with this whole chapter is actually a document where early in the process, you consider risk management. So make sure you consider funding obstacles which may arise. It's number one. Yeah. and you know, at least have thought through the possibilities, what other committees might be able to help with the efforts or whatever, so that it's not catching you off guard, that you're prepared if that possibility does come up that you have funding issues.
Right. Funding shortages are one thing. People shortages are another. That could happen mid-project where you had a project team and then you have some people bail. Couple just tips when that happens. Don't burn bridges. I mean, there may be issues that caused somebody to leave the project, but you want people to feel good about their time on the project, and hopefully they would find other places to serve their Lord. So don't burn those bridges. Keep the relations healthy and Christian and moving in the right direction. Try not to have single points of failure as well. So if one person leaves the project, you don't have a huge gaping hole. You've got maybe a sub-team working on pieces of the project so that there's a partner there left who could continue the work while you're trying to fill some holes. This also, Sally, I think, suggests that you really need to document as much as you can. So even if you do have that one person, if they're documenting what they're doing as they go along, it's easy to find out what they did, what they didn't do, and find your way a little bit more quickly as people leave the project.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard the phrase, you know, no one's indispensable, but it sure can make a big big hole in your project if you're depending on someone and they were to leave. Maybe they just move away, whatever the cause. So be prepared and don't let it kill your project completely if you do end up losing someone.
And speaking of people and issues, there are going to be internal conflicts. We have a section that covers that in this chapter as well. And we talked a little bit about healthy conflict in Chapter 4. Now we're talking about kind of unresolved conflict that really would crush most projects. It'll really stop it dead in its tracks and demotivate the entire team and really be something that would be hard to recover from. And I think just good conflict resolution skills, the ability to communicate, in fact, making sure you provide opportunities for everybody to communicate. I think one of the best pieces of advice I ever was given, I think this was maybe even in the seminary, is just make sure people have some good face-to-face time where they can clear the air. So it's not happening asynchronously. Back then it was through letters or whatever. Now it's through email and those kinds of things. You know, find that good face-to-face time where you can get people together and get people understanding how people think and react. And it's important to do that, I think, in almost every project. I can't think of a project where that's not a good idea.
The next section of the book talks about communication expectations. Ties right in with what you were just saying, Martin, because communication is so key to a team working together on a project. There's a good section in here that focuses just on email, since we use email so much for communication, and you'll want to look there at references a blog post from Matt Perman, who wrote What's Best Next on How to Write Better Emails, gives some really great tips on email so that the communication you're doing is effective and well-received and timely, allows people to act on it in a timely manner because of its organization and things like that.
And then finally, the last section of this particular chapter we called Project Flops. And I think that's kind of everybody's fear, that they'll put in all this work and then the project fizzles. It doesn't achieve its desired objective. It just kind of lands with a thud. And that's going to happen. We've all, I think, been part of those kinds of projects. I guess one of the biggest things to remember is there's really no dishonor in a project flop. It could have been for no fault of your own. You have to remember God's still in charge, and he still has plans for you and other members of the team, so don't get discouraged or swear off future work for your organization. I think it's important to kind of keep that positive attitude and learn from maybe why it didn't achieve the objectives you maybe thought it would. That's why documentation is good. Holding a retrospective meeting to brainstorm with the team about, you know, why things went the way they went. We'll talk a little bit more about this in our closing chapter next month, but it will happen. So just treat it for what it is and move forward.
You know, Martin, we jumped right in. We didn't mention our friend Nehemiah, who's been with us all throughout our book. We've talked about Nehemiah and his project leadership as the Israelites rebuilt the wall around Jerusalem. And I'm sure that there were many days that were discouraging for him, yet they completed their project in just 52 days, which is just unbelievable, the amount of work that they did and the circumstances they did it under. So just like Nehemiah, we have a God who's on our side, who wants our projects to succeed, who works all things to his good and for his glory, for our good and his glory. And we just can be confident in that, just like I'm sure Nehemiah was.
Yeah, one thing that really struck me as we were writing this chapter and looking at Nehemiah's style is kind of his decisiveness, his move forward quickly strategy. He didn't hem and haw. And I think that's a real blessing. If you have that ability and in a lot of these projects that we're working on, it really requires some decision making and be firm and move forward. And if you want to find somebody who did that really well and to God's glory, I think Nehemiah is a good case study. So Sally, that's chapter 8, and we will have kind of a wrap-up closing chapter next month. If you'd like to contribute to this chapter, we would love to hear your feedback. So go ahead and read the chapter. Give us feedback, maybe examples that you have. Go to withallyourheart.tech, and you can kind of find all the chapters that are listed there. We would take feedback on any piece of it, so please jump right in and let us know what you think.
Yeah. We... Uh, have also throughout the book included interviews, kind of real life project management scenarios as each chapter of the book unfolded. And as we gave thought to this chapter, we weren't really looking for somebody that had a project flop, but we know that all projects have challenges and course corrections and things like that. And one really big project that we've heard a lot about over the past year or so is the project to reach out in Latin America. So we thought it would be great to speak with Missionary Mike Hartman and Pastor Nathan Wagenknecht from Multilanguage Publications and hear a little bit about how that project developed and how they kept their hand on the pulse of it and kept things moving along. So listen for our interview with them.
We're very happy to have joining us two friends of the show, folks that we respect their work and really enjoy talking with them. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about some exciting projects that they've got going. First of all, field coordinator, missionary Mike Hartman to Latin America, and then second, and I forgot to ask where you are, Nate. Are you still in Houston? Or are you? Have you?
We do still live in Houston, okay. But Lord willing, we'll be moving to El Paso soon this
okay.
summer.
That voice and face was Nathan Wagenknecht. He is the Latin American Project Coordinator for Multilanguage Publications. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Martin.
Maybe before we dive in too deep into the topic of project management, we should maybe ask you to give us a little bit better introduction than I was just able to give. So roles you play within the Synod and for your respective fields and organizations. How about you go first, Nate?
Sure. I'm working with Multilanguage Publications, which is part of the Board for World Missions. Basically to support with resources the cross-cultural work of any mission field in the States or out of the country in foreign languages. And then my role specifically is to help with Latin America, so focusing on Spanish and Portuguese materials.
Very good. And your background is what? How did you arrive at the place you are today?
I was a missionary in Latin America for 15 years, actually since graduating seminary. So active in the seminary program for Latin America, and then just last year accepted the call to MLP.
Okay, and lovely wife, two kids, and headed to El Paso.
That's right.
Wonderful. Mike, you've been on the show before, so a familiar face to a lot of our listeners, but maybe just give us the quick recap of your history and what you're doing these days.
Sure. I am privileged to live in Mexico. I've been living here since I graduated from the seminary in 1999, and Nate and Multilanguage Publications, they developed the resources, and my main responsibility is helping people in Latin America start churches. And so not just here in Mexico, but all over in Latin America.
Very good. I'm so thrilled to have you both on the show. Mike, you and I got to sit down in the same location just last fall, and folks may even want to reference that show to learn more about the work that the exciting work and the exciting results you're seeing currently. And we definitely like to keep up with your work because it has a technology side to it, which is always near and dear to Wells Techer's heart. So maybe you can kind of back up from the point we are today and tell us a little bit about the Academia Christo project and what you're trying to do with it, maybe how the partnership is really intertwined between the Latin American missionaries and the work done by Multilanguage Publications.
Sure. Well, we in Latin America, and Nate was very much involved with this a couple of years ago, we identified two key areas of needs, and one is simply people don't know about the Lutheran Church in Latin America. You know, and they're at New Ulm, Sally. The town of New Ulm has as many Lutherans living in it as the entire country of Mexico. So one of the issues that we were we're working to deal with is become a known entity in Latin America. And then the other part is helping people to start churches that faithfully proclaim God's word in Latin America. There's a lot of settings in Latin America where you can be, if you have a video about Jesus, you are suddenly an expert on it. And so there's just very, very little training and very little knowledge that people have on basic scriptural truth. So those are the two main things that we've been focused on here.
So those are your objectives. How are you achieving those objectives? What kind of tools, efforts are you putting out there to grow this awareness?
Well, we created a couple of or three different websites. And one is you think of it as a church, that's Academia Cristo, has the school, the church is Iglesia Luterana Cristo, or Christ Lutheran Church. And then we also made our newsletter go digital, and that is now called Cristo Palabra de Vida, or Christ Word of Life. So those are the three websites that we created, and we want to bring people to those websites, and so we use mainly our Academia Cristo Facebook page it's kind of like our way that we do send out digital flyers, and we're able to reach a lot of people and draw attention to what we're doing. And then when they come to the Academia Cristo website, we use live chat feature on the website as a way to connect with people. And we also just here a couple of weeks ago started offering now live online classes as another way to connect with people.
And Nate, is the partnership, where does the partnership with MLP come in here?
Sure. From the beginning, with my experience with Latin American missions, we've been able to work very well together in that you could say MLP provides the material. It used to be focused on book production, mm-hmm. but about a year and a half ago, we made the conscious decision to switch to digital format, digital media. Just recognizing the means of communication that the Lord is giving us, we can distribute it a lot easier, a lot further, it reaches further. So a lot of digital format of books, videos, music, the audio devotions. MLP is able to provide that, those resources, that material. And then we also handle the you could say the management of the websites, the behind-the-scenes work. And then our Latin American missionaries and our national pastors and national churches are able to work with the contacts, the people that we're coming into contact with, and guide them to grow in their faith, but then also look for ways to share their faith and start forming new groups. So MLP kind of handles the resources, and the missionaries and national churches handle the that personal face-to-face contact.
Okay. So maybe a year and a half, 2 years that you guys have been working on these projects, and I'm guessing that you had a vision for this. You thought about the Academia Cristo side and the other pieces of the puzzle and things, but maybe kind of tell us, what's the state of things today as you envisioned it and it's come to fruition? How are things going? How's it being received, and is it working for you?
Well, I think that it has been blessed beyond what we initially envisioned, and that's completely God's doing, and we're extremely thankful to Him for it. We worked really hard to define what the vision is, but I would say that it's moving along the lines of what we had envisioned, but a lot of the specific details, some of the different issues that have come up along the way, those we've had to make plenty of adjustments and adaptations.
I guess that kind of fits really well with our book topic for this week. We've been working this whole season of Wells Tech on a book called With All Your Heart, focusing on project management for churches, schools, and faith-based organizations. And we've followed along the same kind of pathway that you guys have described, in that you know, you have a vision for it and you get concrete about what your goals are and you work toward those. But like you said, oftentimes circumstances and things come up that you hadn't anticipated, or that change kind of the direction that you're headed. And so we were really wanting to focus with you guys on that kind of look at your project, at, you know, this effort that's been underway for several years, and perhaps find out about maybe some of the course corrections and things that you've had to do along the way and how you've managed those. So I'm not quite sure who wants to start, you know, kind of addressing that line of thinking.
Hey, you want to go first?
Sure, I can do that. Probably something that you've already discussed, but I think one of the best ways to avoid course correction is having a good plan to begin with, doing whatever research you can in advance. And I think Mike will talk a little bit of how we developed those plans to begin with. Some of the details along the way, one quick example could be we provide music for the public domain music that can be used as people are starting to gather into groups. And originally the downloads were working just fine, and then we made some adjustments in our settings. I think simply we updated or upgraded our platform, and all of a sudden the downloads weren't working. We, however, in the office didn't become aware of it because it was working on our equipment. So one of the things we had to learn was constantly be getting feedback from our users. Please, you know, when you're having problems, let us know. And we actually have to actively go sometimes and ask, how's it working? People won't just offer that on their own. And then with that, some of us are not the experts in that technology, so make use, find people who know what they're talking about and can help. So we worked with Wells Technology Department and found some solutions that we think are working, but we're still getting feedback on what the users think. So I don't know how insightful that is for you, but maybe that one comment of when you find out that something's not working, but you're not the expert on how to solve it, collaborate and find people who can help.
Yeah, that feedback loop really important, and not always easy, or as easy as maybe you think it should be, figuring out how to kind of hear your audience, understand what their issues are, and then how to respond appropriately and then to communicate that back out. Mike, how about you? Anything, any course corrections that come to mind over the past couple of years that stick in your mind?
Well, yeah, there are a couple of, but, you know, just right now listening to Nate, I think it brings to mind one of the things I think are real key, it has been a real key to our team and dealing with different issues. And when I hear Nate talk about stuff, he'll get right down into the nitty-gritty details of it all. And Nate and I work really well together. I'm just so blessed to work with Nate, but we are about as different of people as you can imagine. And I'm very much the big picture guy, and this is where we're going to go, you know, thinking where things are going to be 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line. And Nate is looking at dealing with the details. I think that highlights, you know, one of those, when you put together a team and a ministry team, whatever the situation might be, really looking at what people's gifts are, what their strengths are, and then trying to get those, match people with different strengths is a real key. But as far as our, you know, other issues that we were dealing with, one that, you know, about a year and a month ago, we launched our Academia Cristo Facebook page, and initially that was really almost by second, you know, that was a second. We weren't initially planning to do that, and we had been planning to use Google AdWords and YouTube channel and some of those ways to promote what we're doing. And we actually went to professionals and helped the professionals help set up what we're doing and set up our promotions plan and how to get people to the website. And it was going okay, but we weren't really building the audience that we were looking for. And so that's when we ended up trying Facebook. But I think there, you know, having that vision that we knew we want to build an audience that we're reaching, and we want to get people to our website. Those having those keys in mind helped us to identify this spot isn't working exactly how it should, and then make adjustments so that we were being able to figure out, realize that this is an issue, and adjust accordingly.
So it sounds like you really had your pulse on the project and watching maybe analytics and all those kind of things pretty closely in order to fine-tune it. And just the rest of the story, because I love it. You started this Facebook page a year and a month ago. How many likes do you have on that Facebook page now?
It's over 250,000.
Wow. That's awesome. What a blessing.
That's a good follow-up question. You probably didn't expect that. So how did you pivot? And I think you've mentioned this before. Greater numbers than you thought probably require course correction as well. You were more successful than you thought you might be. God blessed you more than perhaps you were praying for. That's something that has to be accounted for too, right?
It was, and it's actually when we rolled out phase two of Academia Cristo just here a couple of weeks ago, we revamped how we are connecting with our contacts, because you know, we initially had it set up so you go to the page and then you could sign up, and if you wanted to have all the resources, then you sign up and you get all the resources. Well, we had a few thousand people doing that, and that was really too many, more than we wanted to to manage in the initial phase. And so we opened everything up so that now anybody can go to the website and have access to everything. But then if you're going to, you can request to study in a live course with us, and those are the key contacts that we then want to work with. So we did have to make some adjustments there.
Yeah, that was a total change in strategy then too, right?
Very good. Well, I'm curious what kind of project management tools you use. Obviously, you've got a global effort here. Nate's in Houston. You're down in Mexico. I'm sure there are others tied in from the El Paso office and other places. How do you pull all this together and keep your team moving forward and, you know, be able to respond and change over time? What kind of tools make that work for you?
Well, I think I'll tell about one of the big ones, and I'll let Nate talk about one of the detailed ones. But, you know, I think the big thing that has been the biggest blessing for us is really there's an organization that is made up of Wells business leaders called Ministry Leadership Institute. And those guys were really helped revolutionize the way that we work together and get stuff done. And they helped us develop, they use a format called Traction. You end up putting your whole plan on two sheets of paper, and then you meet every week, and you have as a good way to set up to deal with issues, to keep everybody on task. And we have, I was figuring out the other day, we have over 70 people around the world involved in some way on a regular basis in this thing. So you do need to keep everybody focused. They need to buy in on what they're doing, and you need them focused on the tasks at hand. So that Ministry Leadership Institute, those guys were a real blessing, and the Traction and the Vision Traction Organizer document that they help you to develop and maintain, that has been a huge blessing for us.
And the details, Nate?
Sure, moving to the details. We do continue to use Trello with multi-language publications. Some of my predecessors developed what you call a proven process, the step-by-step process of getting a project, and again, with multi-language publications, it's mostly books or that kind of material, but the step-by-step process needed so that you do a check, check it off each time you finish a step. But it is absolutely essential because there are so many people involved, from writers to translators to style editors, theological editors, layout. so many people involved, if we didn't check off each step along the way, I'm sure things would fall through the cracks. So Trello has been a great blessing along those lines. And as Mike mentioned, this Vision Traction Optimizer, as it's called, weekly meetings with the key people involved has been essential also to keep us all on task and updated on what's going on. And then identifying those issues that are where something's not working the way it's going to. We need, as Martin mentioned earlier, that feedback from the users, but feedback from the team as well with weekly meetings.
Yeah, communication obviously critical. It sounds like you've got the right tools in place and the right attitude toward responding to change, and all of us are dealing with technology, and that's kind of a given, you know, where you can't always plan for everything, and kind of the project manager has that troubleshooting hat he needs to wear and kind of be able to be flexible enough to move one way or the other based on which way the wind is blowing. So you guys I really appreciate you taking the time out of very important projects. I think from the Synod's perspective, these are success stories, and we're really happy that you're doing what you're doing, and we continue to pray for the success and are really thankful for the work that you do. Again, thanks for sharing some of your knowledge with us.
Yep.
No, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate what you guys are doing too.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Nate, and take care.
Absolutely. God's blessings.
Our thanks to Mike, as always, and Nate for kind of showing us a little bit of the behind-the-scenes operations of a very large project. It's touching many lives, as you heard in the interview, and just an opportunity to rejoice with them that God is really blessing their work, and we pray that he would continue to do that.
Definitely. So I know that this show is getting pretty long already. We have lots more to share with you. We should move along to our news and tech, Martin.
Yep. News and tech this week. We wanted to share some big news, some personal news this time, and that's the fact that Google has allowed now podcasts to be listed in their music store. So if you go to play.google.com/music and you do a search for Wells Tech, you will find our show and many other shows, of course. But so if you are somebody that's on Android or uses Google Play Music, this is a way to get our show in your feed now, right, with all your other music. So they have a podcast section. And again, if you just search Wells Tech, you will get this. We knew about this a while back, and we had submitted our podcast, and we had waited a number of months before they finally got this together, and now it is a reality, and you kind of see our stuff right there in Google Play Music. Kind of cool.
It is. It's really neat that we're there from the very beginning, Martin. I was excited to read the blog announcement. It just came out yesterday, Monday, April 18th, and easy to find Wells Tech right there amongst it.
Yep.
So, good stuff.
Let's move on to Wells now, Sally.
Yeah, we have several things to mention in this category. We want to have everyone mark May 4th, coming up very soon, just a couple of weeks away. It's a Wednesday, first Wednesday in May. We'll be celebrating MLC Day again. This is an annual tradition, started last year, where everyone is encouraged to pray, share, and give to MLC. Exciting news this year is that there's matching grant money, so all the gifts received on MLC Day will be matched up to $1,250. $12,500. There's an extra zero there. So the goal would be $25,000 in scholarship money, which could go to 25 or more students on the MLC campus. So real support happening through MLC Day in many, many different ways. We're beefing up the mapping on the site. So excited to map all the people that visit the site that day and pray, share, and give to Martin Luther College on MLC Day. So stay tuned for that.
Keep them in our prayers for sure.
Nice. Definitely.
Is this the second time or third time?
It's the second one. Yep.
Okay. Very nice.
Another mention?
First times.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Gospel Outreach with Media Conference just wrapped up this past Sunday, gowm.org, and all the great conversation, and there was a lot of great conversation around the topics that were posted. All of that's been archived, so you can get back to it and read the content that was posted there across different ways of reaching out with media from mobile devices, within your community and congregation, expanding approaches to gospel outreach and encouraging the needed talent. So many different opinions and ideas shared there. It may be just what your outreach or evangelism committee needs to jumpstart some new efforts using technology. So definitely give it a visit, gowm.org. And then one other quick mention in this category, that it's our April photo challenge, and that is for springtime photos, confirmation photos, and photos related to Romans 1, verse 16, which I don't have in front of me right now. But head over to wellstech.wells.net/photo challenge for all the details.
Sally, with that, I think we are to the point in our show where we do our tips or picks of the week.
Yep, and I am just going to share my screen one more time. And this is really just pointing to an article from Make Use Of, which maybe I should first point to makeuseof.com, which is a great site with all kinds of technology news. They have daily newsletters and things you can subscribe to, and just all kinds of interesting ways to use technology and news and things like that. This article was titled "The Top Google Updates in 2016 That You'll Want to Know About." And it's a very lengthy article. I can tell you that you're going to find all different kinds of categories here, from Gmail, Google Photos. It talks about the fact that they have smart albums that are auto-created and already limiting the number of shots that are included in the album. So if you took 5 versions of the same picture, it will smartly detect the best version of that picture and include only one in the albums that it's creating. So Google Photos just gets smarter and smarter all the time. There's information about Google Maps, how you can use it on an iPhone to look up things along your route without leaving the navigation that's going on. Information on Google Hangouts and the fact that users don't have to have a Google account any longer to join Hangout calls. And it goes on and on. There's information on Google Image Search, on Google Drive enhancements, Google Docs, even Google Forms. And I think, again, just kind of a personal thing, whatever Google tools you use, you might want to just jump into the document and find some new tips and cutting-edge kind of changes that they're making to all their tool sets. So check out the article and see what fits with your needs.
Very nice. Thank you, Sally. So much of Google, you know, I think these little tip sheets and walkthroughs are really helpful to kind of understand the depth and breadth of Google products. My product or tip or pick of the week is from Microsoft Windows, and we've talked about this. I did a little search a while back, or through all of our previous WellsTech issues, and noticed that we've talked about this on 2 or 3 other occasions, but we've never made it a pick. And that is the snipping tool that is available in Windows. I think it started in Windows 7. Then obviously in Windows 8, now in Windows 10. I bring up in Windows 10 because they've added a new feature to it, which is kind of cool, and that's the ability to take a screen grab, but also delay, set a delay before it happens. So if you're trying to capture something or get your mouse out of the window or get a drop-down menu out of the way or in the picture, you can do that and kind of craft the shot before the thing is taken. It's really easy to use. If you're using Windows 10, 8, or 7, you just open up the snipping tool. So I'll just do a quick demo here. And up will pop a little, can you see it? Probably not.
No.
How do I do this, Sally? Can I do the whole desktop? Here's a little lesson on Google Hangouts.
I'm not sure if it'll show. It probably would if you did the whole desktop show.
How about that?
I see me. Lucky
okay.
you.
Okay. There, right there.
See it? Yep. Okay. Yep, I do.
So right here in the middle, you've got the delay feature. You can delay it from 0 to 5 seconds. You can do all kinds of snips. You can do free form, so you're drawing, basically. You can do a rectangle. And I probably just screwed things up there. You can do a window, so pick the window you want, and you can do a full screen. And once you've done it, it comes into the interface, and then you can do a couple things with it. You can do a copy and paste. You can do, and you can do a save, or you can do an email. And all of those are real convenient. We've talked, Sally, in the past about TechSmith's Snagit, right?
Right.
And that's maybe a little bit more full-featured, but it also costs some money, too. Mm-hmm. This is built right into your operating system, and you have the ability to grab those screenshots. So there's lots of reasons you'd want to do that. Sometimes you're looking for help when you're saying, this is what I'm seeing on my screen, or this is the error message that I'm getting. So you could easily grab a screenshot of that. Or maybe you're demonstrating something, and you say, this is what you should look for. Click on this button so you're a webmaster. And somebody's trying to learn Final Web or some other content management system. So you're trying to show them what your screen looks like. Just real quick and easy ways to show rather than tell. You know, picture is worth 1,000 words, and the snipping tool built into Windows does a great job at that. It doesn't do video. It just does kind of the screen grab. It saves it in PNG format. Actually, I think you can set what kind of format it saves in, but really quick and easy, and then it just goes away and stays out of the way when you don't need it anymore. So,
yeah, I can remember helping pastors with this as they were preparing for Bible classes or worship even, and wanting to share something from a website, for instance, or anything that they have on their screen. Teachers certainly can make use of it as well. Anybody that does any kind of presenting, it's nice to be able to get a capture of things. And I'll give you a little clue, Martin. Trade in all my secrets now. Earlier, I wished you a happy birthday with a special logo on the website. That's actually an image. I took a screenshot and just overlaid on top of it. So there's an example of a little screen capture that I took and added the happy birthday site. If you go to Wells Tech, you won't really see the birthday hat, but you know, you'll know that it's there for my best wishes. So all kinds of creative things you can do with screen capture. So.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Let's move on to ministry resources. And I wanted to share an article that I came across from Church Mag. We reference this site all the time. That's churchm.ag, kind of a funky URL. They had a post here called 7 Ways to Use Facebook Live this week. And last week, I believe in News and Tech, we talked about the new streaming service that Facebook launched, where you simply go into your profile, and to do a profile update, there's now a little button that will allow you to live stream using your device's camera, whether it be an iPad or iPhone or Android. And here's a specific article about 7 ways to use Facebook Live from a church perspective. So it's, as always, a quick read for event highlights, behind-the-scenes stuff, message follow-up, announcements, daily devotion, book review, Sunday preview, all awesome ideas about how to use Facebook Live on your church's or your organization's homepage, just to kind of introduce a little bit of video. It's so quick and easy to do. It truly is just a couple button taps on your device, and away you go. So good article to read.
Definitely. Thanks for sharing that. I think it's time for our featured video. And this week, our featured video ties back to our discussion topic about
productivity
and dealing with challenges and things. And one of the challenges with productivity could be dealing with interruptions. So maybe that's why your projects get off track, because you're constantly being interrupted or whatever it is. Productivity guru David Allen has a video about dealing with interruptions. It's a short little video, only 4 minutes long, and I think it's worth your watch.
It is, and I've shared this almost every time I do a presentation on productivity, because it really is just kind of a no-brainer kind of common sense approach to kind of handling those incoming phone calls or walk-ins or even things that come across your computer screen, just ways to kind of compartmentalize that and get back to work when you need to. So good stuff.
Keep you from being an AWOL project manager, huh?
Yeah, nobody wants to be that. No. Let's close with just a little tease for next week. It's our community feedback show. So all the feedback we have received over since the last feedback show will be up for sharing at this particular show. So you have between now and next Tuesday to offer your feedback to get on the show, and we would love it if you would. Your contributions are really special and important to get on, to get on our radar, and so we can share with other people. If you go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, you will see across the top just a lot of different ways to connect with us. All your social networks are listed there. You could send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. On our show notes page, there's also a little icon on the right side of the screen that says send voicemail. You just click that. It's in the application will pop up and say, can I use your microphone? And you say yes, and then you talk. Could not be simpler than that. So we would love to get your feedback on the show. It can be about anything we've talked about on the show, anything you want to talk about or share, questions that you have. It's just kind of a neat way to widen the audience and involve as many people as possible. So please take advantage of that and join the conversation in our community feedback show.
Definitely. Join us in wishing Martin a birthday one more time before April 19th podcast is over, and wish you many blessings in the year ahead.
Thank you, Sally. And thank all of you for tuning in on my birthday, and we will see you again next week. Bye-bye.